21,000 that are 85 or older. By the year 2020, it is going to be over 200,000 people in Sacramento County that are 65 years of age or older. So we have a population that is getting older, but I'm not going to even talk about 2040. Just in the next 10 years, we need to prepare for, and that it's not just in healthcare, but also our community. We need to prepare for people who are going to want to stay in their own homes. At least I know I do, but may not be able to drive anymore. So what is our public transportation going to look like? What are our services going to look like? So there's a lot that we need to think about. Next slide, please. Just want to show you the incorporated cities within this county, and you can see that although the city of Sacramento is the largest and is expected to continue to be the largest, take a look at Elk Grove. Elk Grove in 2002 had 81,000 inhabitants. In 2008, it had 139,000. One of the fastest growing cities in the nation, not just in California, but in the nation. Yes, sir.
The latest science is 141,000.
Well, we just went up to 2008, so yeah, already it's continuing to grow. Thank you. Next one, please. And this just tells you what the populated areas of Sacramento County look. And there is an urban, there's kind of like an urban center to the county. You can see that the delta is really not, it's very sparsely populated, which causes problems in healthcare for the people who do live in the delta. And then you'll see the southern portion of the county is growing very fast, too. Next, please. Next, because there is an issue with undocumented immigrants, I think we need to take a look at who is foreign-born that lives in Sacramento County. And you will see that there are 269,000 out of the 1.4 million, 269,000 folks, 270,000 folks are foreign-born. And the majority of the folks that are foreign-born are not citizens. 152,000 are not citizens, 116,000 are. So 56% are not citizens. Next, please. Then I want you to take a look at who is poor in Sacramento County. And this one is taken from another. The two documents that I use the most were the Community Services Planning Council snapshot. And this is a document that was produced by a group called the Sacramento Health Improvement Project. And it was published in 2008, and it's called Toward an Improved Healthcare System for Sacramento County's Underserved Residents. Findings and recommendations from the Sacramento Health Improvement Project. And it was produced by Dorothy Meehan, a consultant, in July of 2008. So a lot of the information you'll be seeing comes from that document also. And what I want you to see here is, and the latest data we have is from 2006, that 73% of those people who are poor in our county are native born. 6%, an additional 6% are naturalized citizens, four more of naturalized citizens, for a total of almost 79% of the poor in our county were born here or are citizens. 21% are foreign born. Next, please. So now let's talk about the main way that people access healthcare. And the main way most of us access healthcare is through health insurance. And 52% of the people in Sacramento County receive their health insurance through their employer. That amount has been going down. Over the last 10 years, fewer and fewer employers, other than government entities continue to provide insurance to their employees. But private concerns, private organizations and businesses have been decreasing their offering of health insurance to their employees because of the cost. You heard about the costs. Public programs such as Medi-Cal, Medicare, Healthy Families, etc., insure about 25% of the population. Then a very small number of our residents purchase health insurance on their own. They go to the private sector and they purchase this insurance. A lot of these folks, 8.4%, are people who are on COBRA who have just lost their employment and can afford to continue to pay for their insurance for a limited period of time, usually a year. And then 13% of folks that live in this county at some point during the year, not necessarily for the whole year, have had no health insurance at all. And you will be surprised to hear, or maybe not, because this group is a fairly sophisticated one, that a large proportion of those 13.2 are young people, single adults. Many of them are in college and just simply either don't see it as necessary or simply can't afford health insurance. They're very healthy. They're probably the cheapest people to insure. And when I was medical director of the county clinics, I used to see that. They were usually college students that went up to the Sierra, ski, and broke a leg. And all of a sudden, they were medically indigent because they were in their 20s, essentially healthy, no insurance, and no way to pay for that surgery that they needed to fix their leg. Next, please. This is to make a correlation between, you saw how 52% of our insurance comes through our employment here in Sacramento County. The employment rate, this is again from the Community Services Planning Council. From January 2008 through March 2009, take a look at what has happened to unemployment in Sacramento County. And that is only going to increase. We are a government town. And we are looking at major layoffs, not just in local government, but also in state government. And a large proportion of our population is employed by state government. So although it's going to hurt throughout the state, Sacramento County is going to be particularly impacted by the layoffs that are being proposed both at the state and local level. Next, please. And all those people will be without insurance, by the way, health insurance, because their health insurance will lapse unless they're able to continue to pay for it. So yesterday, I did a fairly quick search. I used an application called eHealth Insurance, and I searched for Sacramento County just to see what was available commercially for all those people who are going to be losing their insurance when they lose their employment. I came up with, on your left side, are the different insurers that provide insurance. Came up with 7 different insurers that I might be able to purchase insurance from. Those 7 different insurers combined provide 114 different plans from very, very complicated. In fact, I'm a physician. I've been a physician for 30 years. And as I was reading through what it gave me, it was just extremely complicated. I could purchase a health maintenance organization that was mostly Kaiser. And it was fairly reasonable. I think I could have purchased maybe for, you had to enter your age, so I entered my age. So for maybe $400 a month, I could get HMO, which is a closed system. Does a fairly good job of providing healthcare. In fact, I have to tell you, my father-in-law, who worked in the shipyards in Oakland as a young man before he went into the Army in World War II, he was one of the original members of Kaiser when it first started. His number, I think, was something like 000310, something like that, his Kaiser number. And he used to boast that each of his 3 sons cost him only $5 because that was his copay when his wife had the children. He really loved it. He was a Kaiser member for his entire life, and they did a pretty good job on him. So Kaiser certainly was one of the options. Then I could do either a PPO, which is a preferred provider organization, and it would cost me about $500 to $600. And that meant that I could go to a physician that was within that network of preferred providers, and I would pay a copay to go there. Or I could have a health savings account with a high deductible, and I could pay up to $5,000 a year before my insurance kicked in for being seen. So it was really interesting that, yes, sir.
In Elk Grove, we have healthcare and Kaiser, and Kaiser. And HealthNet has an HMO option and another option, a PPO option.
And you're right. I left HealthNet out of that, and HealthNet was one of the ones that was available. So I apologize. HealthNet is another one. So there are 8 major insurers here in Sacramento County. Thank you for mentioning it. So, but they all had the same thing, all of them, 114 different plans. How do you choose the best one for you when there's that much difference? Next, please. So now I'd like to talk about, those are the private plans. They are available to those who can afford it. And I don't know if I was let go from my job, how long I could afford to pay even the $400 a month. Because that is what, $4,800 a year. And that's a lot of money if you don't have an income coming in. So let me tell you about government-sponsored insurance here in Sacramento County. We have geographic managed care here in Sacramento County. We're the only county in the state that has this model. And everyone who gets Medi-Cal, everybody who is poor enough to qualify to receive government insurance for health care, and that is mostly adults that have children under the age of 21 living in their household. So mostly, a lot of these are single parent households, mostly women with children. But there are also two parent households that qualify for this service. So the children are all covered until the age of 18, or 20, yes, until the age of 18. The parents are also covered, as long as the children under the age of 21 live in their household. Okay? So that is mostly. And those folks, whether they like it or not, have to be enrolled into one of the five insurance companies that offer geographic managed care. So they get to choose from those five where they want to be insured. They can change insurances, I believe, once a year. And if they choose to change their coverage, depending on what day of the month they choose to change their coverage, and I'm just trying to explain how complicated this system is that we have here, they may go uninsured for anywhere from 15 days to 45 days. Because your insurance only kicks in at the beginning of the month, I believe. So if you choose on the 2nd of June to change your insurance, the people who you were insured with say, you're no longer with us, you've disenrolled. But the people that you want to enroll with say, we don't kick in until the beginning of the month. Okay, yes, ma'am.
Who are those five providers?
They're coming in a minute. Please, next one. These are the providers. Blue Cross, HealthNet, Kaiser, Molina, and Western Health Advantage. And the enrollment totals, and they do limit their enrollment. So if you want to enroll in Kaiser, and they have reached their limit of 20,000, then you have to wait until somebody leaves in order to be able to enroll with them. So the healthy, essentially healthy families with young children are in geographic managed care. The disabled, could we go back to the other slide? The elderly and disabled who are poor enough to qualify for Medi-Cal, for example, people who are blind, people who are amputees, if you're poor enough, you qualify for Medi-Cal even if you're a single adult, they may apply to be part of geographic managed care. The good thing about geographic managed care is on paper, you're assigned to a physician, so you have a physician who's responsible for your services. And that's a good thing, because it has happened in this community that people on Medi-Cal, because Medi-Cal pays doctors so little, people on Medi-Cal, even though they have supposedly coverage, can't find anybody to see them. And that has happened quite a bit. So geographic managed care on paper solves the issue. I can tell you that anecdotally, there are stories of folks that don't speak the language that go to their doctor's office, and even though the law says that the doctor must provide a translator, on that day there is no translator there. And so if the person isn't speaking the language, and you saw how many foreign-born citizens we have, there's a communication issue, and that does translate into no access or poor access to health care. There is also the issue of being able to get an appointment. You know, you may have a doctor that is required to see you, but when you call it, your appointment may be weeks or months in the future. And so sometimes people end up in the emergency room, even though they have a doctor on paper, because they can't get in to see their doctor on a timely basis. Next one again, please. Yes?
I'm a women's health nurse practitioner, and what I see so often are women who have a GMC plan, but they don't, it's so complex, they don't even understand that they have a primary care provider, let alone who it is. And those who do know and go to them are so dissatisfied with the care that they are getting. So that a lot of the physicians who contract as PCPs with geographic managed care are not us would choose if we had a choice. And I find that very disheartening because I can't provide primary care for my patients. And when I say to them, I can't deal with this problem, go to your PCP, they're going, I won't.
That is a huge, what you're describing is a huge obstacle to healthcare. Yes, ma'am.
I just wonder if this person goes to one of these physicians and is given a prescription, what help do they have to pay for the prescription? How do they get it?
If you are in geographic managed care, that should be covered because Medi-Cal covers the prescriptions that are within the formulary. So as long as your physician is prescribing within the formulary of the plan, you should be able to get your prescription. So prescriptions, again, should not be a problem, although physicians don't always follow. This gets very complicated. Just think if you're a physician who are seeing people on all these different plans, plus the 114 other plans that are in the commercial sector, how difficult it might be for a physician to figure out what your plan covers and what it doesn't, what the formulary is and what it isn't. Yes, ma'am, you were going to say something.
Well, I had known of a person who was in this situation and went to get the prescription. The cost was $200.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
That they had to pay?
Yeah.
And they had they had geographic managed care?
I don't know, but I was just wondering if that would not happen if they were in.
With geographic managed care, if the physician prescribes within the formulary, that should not be a problem. There is usually a way by which a physician can ask for an exception. If they wish to provide a prescription that's outside of the formulary, they can ask for an exception, and every insurance company has their own way of doing these exceptions. It gets very complicated. You can see where people can get lost. Regarding geographic managed care, I have to tell you, this is anecdotal, but several years ago, when I was still medical director of the county clinics, I decided I was going to help one of my patients to apply for geographic managed care. She really qualified, but she had only, I believe, a fourth grade education and really didn't understand the form. So I thought, well, I'll fill these out for her. Boy, you know, I could not fill them out for her properly. I did not understand the forms. So it was a really humiliating experience for me. I had to actually go to our Department of Human Assistance and get one of the eligibility workers to help me for her because I just couldn't do it. So, you know, I do have an advanced degree, and if I can't understand the forms, how can we expect other people? Somebody back there has a...
I have a question. I'm different, and I'm covered under TRICARE, VA, and also because I get Social Security disability, I have options to get Kaiser.
Center for a week at however many hundreds of however many thousands of dollars a day that is. What's their thought process with that?
Well, we're going to talk a little bit about mental health, but it is a huge problem. You're absolutely right. And it's because we have such a Byzantine system, or rather non-system, that it makes that you are asked to do things that don't make sense. You're absolutely right.
We'll spend $15,000 for you to go have a vacation at Sutter for a week.
Just doesn't make sense. Yeah.
I was just going to comment that my impression is that these complicated forms are deliberate. I've looked at examples from other countries that provide universal health care, and they're deliberately very simple and clear.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
I was just wondering how Medicare Part D impacted.
Can you speak a little louder, please?
Yes, I was wondering how Medicare Part D impacted the Medicaid patients in the geographic managed care. Because
in this case, it does, is because Medicare is a different system.
It's a different system, but Part D greatly impacted Medicaid. And a lot of the people on Medicaid that I know had to go without their psych meds for a period of time.
Okay, you must be talking about people who are doubly qualified,
yeah.
Medicare and Medicaid. No,
they were straight Medicaid. And because Medicare Part D took effect, it impacted the Medicaid system.
How did it do? I'm sorry, that's not
copays.
Something I'm aware of.
It increased the Medi-Cal copays, the share of cost.
for people who are doubly.
Singly.
I don't understand how that is possible.
They didn't have Medicare, but when Medicare Part D went through, one of the sellouts of it was that Medicaid would also be impacted.
Wow.
And they would reduce the coverage.
Yeah,
well, that is new information. I was not aware that Medicare had impacted Medicaid.
Yeah, well, the way they set up Medicare Part D.
I know that the folks that were doubly covered, Medicaid and Medicare, had a problem. So maybe after my presentation,
yes,
we can talk about that, because that is not something I'm aware of. Yes, ma'am.
Just a quick question. Where does EHS fit into that?
EHS.
The different plans, yes. We see a lot of patients who have EHS. It's a geographic managed care plan.
So is this, I know that there was a new plan that was authorized this year, so that may be the one. This is information from 2008, April 2008. So there may be a new plan this year that I'm not familiar with yet. So I suspect that there may now be, I know that none of these were discontinued, so there must be a sixth plan available now this year, and I do not know how many people are enrolled in it. Yes, ma'am.
And the health plans themselves were having a lot of difficulty finding mental health providers who would accept their patients. So that gentleman's problem about, you know, the split, the dichotomy about accessibility to potential access to medical care also impacts these folks. You know, so the Medi-Cal people, even though they are supposed to have coverage, cannot necessarily get mental health coverage. They're just a whole bunch of. The other thing is, another part of the complexity, Medi-Cal recipients have the right to disenroll once a month.
Oh, it's once a month.
It's not annually.
So
that's why it is so complicated, right, because people are continually enrolling and disenrolling.
Okay. Thank you.
So
it's
very, very complex.
It gets very and very business-y for folks.
And the bigger problem is that I can say this now because I no longer work there. I retired. The state budget cuts prevented us from doing our auditing, so we could not just drop into a clinic to check that they were providing access. So when you're talking about a government-run entity, you also have to think about the staffing adequacy to audit and check. And that's another complex part of our current system that really needs to change.
Absolutely, you're right. One of the things that we as voters purchase when we purchase government services is this transparency and this regulation that we can't do if we don't fund it adequately.
And we try. We really try.
Thanks.
Now
let me tell you about dental services, which are, if the governor's proposal goes through, will be eliminated from Medi-Cal altogether. But right now there is geographic managed care for dental care. And if we have concerns about the medical portion of it, we don't even know what the services are that are being provided in dental. But as far as the providers know, and maybe Mr. Daniels will be talking about this later, it doesn't appear that there's a lot of access to dental care, despite the fact that on paper, everybody has a dental provider too. Next, please. So, here in Sacramento County, we do have four hospital systems. They are all not-for-profit. Regardless of what you may hear and regardless how you may perceive that they behave, they are all not-for-profits. And that has some requirements for them. They are required to, because they're not-for-profit, they are required to have some community benefits. They are required to provide a certain amount of charity care. All four hospital systems. I did a very quick search of the Sacramento Sierra Valley Medical Society's Directory of Physicians and came up with 1,366 that are members. There are a whole lot more that are not members. Interestingly, about 1,100 of those physicians are in the city of Sacramento, which isn't surprising because the medical center is within the city limits, as are three other hospitals, Mercy General, Sutter Memorial, and Sutter General. So a large concentration of the physicians and probably specialists in our county are within the city limits of the city of Sacramento. Over the last 20 years since I've been here in Sacramento, I can tell you that when I arrived here in 1981, there were a lot of small medical practices, a lot of physicians in solo practice, and over the last 25 years, that has changed quite a bit. Most physicians now work within large medical practices. There are a few physicians, most of them serving the ethnic communities, to be honest with you. They are in solo practice or in smaller groups. But they tend to be at a disadvantage for these contracts with geographic managed care and other things, because if you are a solo physician in a practice, you're required to provide a lot of health education and other ancillary services that are important. But if you're a single doctor in your office with your overhead, it's very, very hard to provide that. In addition, although you may hear that physicians are making a lot of money, the truth is a lot of that money that is in the health system is not going to physicians. It's going to administrative overhead for health insurances, et cetera. And the reimbursement for physicians tends to be fairly low. The private providers try to approximate Medi-Cal reimbursement as closely as they possibly can. So, and Medi-Cal really does not reimburse the full cost at all. So it's a huge issue in financing. I know you're going to have some presentations on that. I'm not going to get into that. I'm not an expert in financing. But I can tell you that that is a huge problem within our system. And then there are community clinics. And you will be hearing in greater detail later today about our community clinics. They are very bravely trying to provide services that are no longer being provided through the county. They're trying to help the people who are uninsured, and most of them are living on the edge, but I will defer to Mr. Daniels on that. Yes. There are some that are. I know that the effort recently became FQHC and several are applying for that. That's for those of you who don't know, federally qualified health centers, what FQHC stands for. You'll probably hear a little bit more about that. But you are allowed, when you are an FQHC, to get reimbursement that is closer to your costs than when you are just doing plain Medicaid. Okay, next, please. So let me tell you about the County Medical Indigent Services Program, because in California, every county is required by law to give medical services to its indigent. And every county has its own definition of what indigent means. Okay, it used to be before 1983 that Medicaid covered everyone who was poor that needed services. So if you were a single adult between the ages of 21 and 65, you were covered by Medicaid. But in 1983, I guess there were budget problems. And at that point, the state of California made a decision. And the decision was that they were going to eliminate Medicaid services to a certain group of people, and that would become a county responsibility. And in order to for counties to be able to meet that responsibility, they were going to receive a certain amount of money. It was called realignment money, that was a little bit less than what the state was spending on these same people, but you know, counties are so much more efficient that they would be able to do the same with less. So that's what happened. And in Sacramento County, the Board of Supervisors at that time made a decision that rather some counties took a look at this money and said, you know, we can't do this. And so they contracted back to the state. And Bruce is here, and he can correct me if I tell you anything that's wrong. But this is my understanding, my low-level understanding of what happened. So some counties contracted back to the state, and the state still manages their programs. But in Sacramento County, the Board of Supervisors said, hey, we already have two clinics that are public health clinics. There was one on C Street, 15th and C Street, Capitol Health Center, which was known as the STD clinic in this county. And there was also a chest clinic that was kind of operated out of that same facility that was for people with tuberculosis. The Board of Supervisors said, well, let's just expand our clinic network and let's just have clinics for the indigent. And they placed clinics throughout the county in the more populated areas in 1983. So there was a clinic in Rush Park in Citrus Heights, Northeast Clinic. There was one in Del Paso Heights, Del Paso Clinic. The C Street Clinic remained. They created a clinic on Stockton and Broadway in the old fairgrounds that was the primary care center. And then there was one on 24th Street and Florin Road, which was the South City Clinic. And then because the neighborhood really wanted a clinic, they created the Oak Park Clinic, which was only a mile away from the Stockton Broadway Clinic, but served that neighborhood. And that was the clinic network that actually I ran when I was medical director from 1993 to 1999. And that network of clinics did two things. They did primary care for these indigents, which turned out to be single adults between the ages of 21 and 65, and also did the public health services. And we will talk about what the public health services are. At that time, we were seeing about 58,000 people a year for the mixture of public health services and primary care. I can tell you that in 2009, this year, there were 27,000 individuals that in February of this year were eligible for county services. So that's kind of a reduction from what I can tell. And I know that because on February 10th of this year, the Board of Supervisors voted to eliminate services to residents who could prove that they were legal residents of this county. So the Department of Human Assistance had to send a letter out to everyone who was eligible for the services at that time to let them know that from here on out, when they came in to do their eligibility, they would need to prove that they were legal residents. And that was 27,000 letters that went out. So there were 27,000 residents. Now you saw how many if you recall that third or fourth slide that I showed you, we have over 122,000 people who are at some time in the year are not insured. Not all of them would qualify for CMIS services. Next. Because these are the eligibility requirements for the county CMISB. And in case you can't read this, and it's not in your slides because I added this last night, to be qualified for Sacramento County CMISB, the new requirement is you have to prove that you are a legal resident. You can have a home is exempt. Other real property is limited to a net value of $6,000. Personal property includes cash, checking or savings, accounts, bond certificates, etc., etc. You're allowed one vehicle for transportation. Life insurance for $1,500 is exempt. An exempt for consideration is personal property that are essential household equipment, such as furniture and tools and supplies, okay? All available resources must be utilized. A CMISB applicant must apply for all financial resources that may be available. The total of all property reserves shall not exceed $2,000 for one and $3,000 for two. So if you have a savings account, you can't have more than $2,000 in it. And your income limit, cash or contributions in kind received, okay? One person cannot make more than $600 a month, okay? So you can have a house, you can have a car, maybe a couple thousand dollars in your savings account, and make less $600 or less. So you can see that there's a large number of people in Sacramento County that wouldn't qualify for complete services because very few people can live on $600 a month, I'm sorry. However, if you make more than that, say you make $601 a month, that $1 has to go be paid first for medical services before CMISB kicks in. Suppose you make $1,000 a month. Your copay then is $400. Can you imagine? So you're not allowed anything else. If you are a sick person, so as you can imagine, there are a lot of people who qualify for CMISB services with the copay who will only use it if they have a catastrophe, if they need major surgery, or if they end up in the hospital because they can't take care of their diabetes or their high blood pressure. That is when they will use their CMISB because they can't afford to use it any other time. So this is the services that are available in Sacramento County. Next, please. So right now, because of budget cuts, the network that I described to you that was created in 1983 has contracted quite a bit. Last year, they closed Oak Park Health Center, Northeast Health Center, and the Capitol Health Center. So that STD clinic that had been there since the 1950s is gone now. It's no longer, it's empty right now, I believe. I don't think it's being used. The effort that is one of the community clinics will be reopening the Oak Park Health Center sometime in the near future. The budget that will be heard this coming week, it is proposed to close the Del Paso Health Center, which is on Research Drive in Del Paso Heights. So all that will be left is the primary care center, the South City Health Center, and a walk-in clinic for the homeless called Mercy Clinic Loaves and Fishes, which is a partnership between Loaves and Fishes, the county, and Mercy Hospitals. I guess now called CHW, but when I worked there, that's when I started with the county, that's where I was. I was the doctor assigned to Mercy Clinic Loaves and Fishes. And it's a walk-in clinic for the homeless. Next, please. So I noticed that in this document that I've been using, they talked about the student-run clinics. And Sacramento County and UC Davis have a wonderful tradition of having students, particularly actually second year and third year and fourth year students, running these clinics. Used to be in partnership with the county, but that in the last 2 or 3 years has disappeared. Clinica Tepati, that used to be located at Capitol Health Center, I believe now is running out of the effort, has been around for over 30 years. When I first came to Sacramento and I became clinical faculty at UC Davis, I used to occasionally work in Clinica Tepati. What they do is on Saturdays and on weekends, they open up the clinic for a few hours. There's usually a physician that's a mentor, and the students see the patients for free, provide medications if they can, and the mentor, the physician with the license actually signs off. It's a wonderful tradition. They can't see very many patients, to be honest with you, because they're students. The patients know that that's what they're going to see on the weekends. They do a wonderful job, and I can't tell you how many young doctors that used to work in one of these clinics are now physicians that really care about the poor and the underserved. So they are really, they're kind of the cradle for caring physicians in this community, and they're very valuable. But I think that it is a mistake to consider them as part of this infrastructure, because that's really not what they can do. They can't see that many patients. Do you have any idea how many patients they see together?
Together, no, but on a particular day, they might see about 20 people.
Okay, so they might see about 20 people on a particular day. It's important, it's valuable, but we should not be asking medical students to pick up what we all should be doing. But I want to really pay a tribute to these. All of these clinics serve certain populations. Clinica Tepati was started by Mexican-American students. Pahom Asian Clinic by students of Asian heritage. And I have to tell you, they'll see anybody that walks in. They don't specifically see, although I know that in Clinica Tepati and in Imani, they always make sure that they speak Spanish, because there's so many people who speak Spanish that come to those clinics. The Joseph Terry Memorial Clinic was started by Dr. Neil Flynn, and it serves mostly drug and alcohol folks that are addicted. Shifa Clinic, I believe, is a Muslim clinic that is run by a physician and students. And these last two were new to me, so I can't tell you very much about them, but I'm very pleased to see that that tradition continues within the medical school. Next, please. So there are community clinics, and yes, there are federally qualified health centers as well as lookalikes. And I'm not going to say much about that because you will be hearing about it. I would also like to include, however, Planned Parenthood and reproductive health clinics as part of the community clinic system, because they do fill a special need, particularly for women who tend to see the doctor more often than men, particularly in their reproductive years. Next. And there are free clinics, and we already talked about the student clinics. CHW, Mercy does have free clinics also, and I think they may be included in the community clinic, so I won't talk too much about them, but Mercy Clinic Loaves and Fishes is one of them that is a free clinic. There's one in a school called White Rock. And there may be others that Mercy runs as part of their mission. And so those are available certain days of the week. Mercy Clinic Loaves and Fishes is open 5 days a week, but I know that White Rock is open in the evenings, just 2 or 3 days a week. So it varies. The patients that go there tend to know when they're open, so they're available. Next, please. Let's talk about mental health. Because although the funding streams for mental health, and classically, you will see if you have insurance, that mental health tends to be an exclusion or a very limited benefit in health, in your health insurance. The truth is, that shouldn't be true. Mental health is part of our general health, should be included as a benefit, and should not be restricted. Can you imagine if you had diabetes and you were told that you can only go to see your doctor twice a month, regardless of what your condition is? And after 10 visits, you can't see your doctor anymore. That's what happens with mental health. If you have a diagnosis, most of our insurance programs really limit our access. You are only allowed X number of days of inpatient care if you have mental health, and you are only allowed X number of visits to a psychiatrist if you have a mental health issue. And after that, tough, you're on your own. And that just doesn't seem right. There are several, yes, ma'am.
Can we repeat that question so everybody?
Yes, the question is, haven't the parity laws changed that? And the answer is yes, there are now parity laws and we are in the process of changing that. But I can tell you that my insurance right this year still has a limit on it. So even though there are laws that say there can't be, my insurance hasn't gotten there yet.
Mm-hmm. To me, it always seemed like your mental health care, when you're done, should be decided on how much you've progressed. Because you go in there for a specific behavior problem, how has your behavior changed? It's just like if I went in for a broken leg and it wasn't healed after the time, they would extend the time.
The comment for those of you who couldn't hear it is that mental health services should be based on how much you've progressed. Just like with a broken leg, if your leg hasn't healed, you continue to see the doctor until it does. And I can't argue with that. Yes, ma'am.
I think another problem is that the non-physician mental health providers who are contracted with the insurers are so limited, and if anybody's ever accessed mental health care, you know how important your relationship with that provider is. And, you know, if you're already established with somebody who's not listed on their very short list, you're out of luck.
Okay. Did everybody hear that comment? The comment is that the non-physician mental health providers are very limited. So a lot of mental health services are predicated on a good relationship with your provider, because a lot of the benefit that you get is from your relationship with your provider. And so they're usually, if you try to access mental health services, the list of providers is very limited. So you may not be able to find somebody that you can really work with, and sometimes you can't even find somebody who can take you because they are filled. Yes, ma'am.
Do you know what's behind this kind of thing? That the insurance companies either are dismissive of mental health for some reason?
I think it's cost containment. I think it can be costly. Some people have mental health problems that are lifelong, that need to have services throughout their life, just like Crohn's disease for a very long time. There was a lot of stigma to mental health, and I think that this is the result of that, but this is just my opinion. I'd like to tell you a little bit about mental health for the indigent, because just think how limited access is to mental health, even though we have parity laws, for those people who are insured. If you are not insured, you can only access mental health services if you are part of what's called the target population. Have you ever heard that term? Because there are such limited public dollars for mental health treatment, the mental health people at the county have made a definition of who can access those services. It tends to be people, and this is the definition, the last time I checked, people who have severe recurrent disease. So if you have, and I remember this was for depression, major depression that's recurrent. So if you are indigent, you have your first episode of depression, it comes back, you get over it, you don't commit suicide, you get over it, it comes back, then you would qualify for services. If you are out and out, schizophrenic and psychotic, having an acute psychotic episode, then you would qualify. If you have a phobia that keeps you from working, heaven forbid, tough. You can't get treatment for that. If you have anxiety attacks that can be quite severe and are easily treatable, but you're indigent, you can't get services for that. The only, we used to have in Sacramento County, when I first came here, 3 medical psych wards in hospitals. That is, if somebody was mentally ill but also had, say, a heart attack and needed special care, they could be in these medical psych wards. They're gone. We do not have medical psych wards in Sacramento County anymore. The only place that is a locked facility where a mentally ill person can be is the Mental Health Treatment Center, which has 100 beds. It's full. It's not closed. It's full. It has 100 beds. It is not a med psych ward, okay? So if somebody has a medical problem, they can't be legally in the Mental Health Treatment Center. That you can have a 5150, that means a voluntary detention while you're being evaluated for 72 hours by a psychiatrist. In the last month, the Mental Health Treatment Center has started closing its doors when they are full. They have 100 beds. They used to kind of pay for people to be hospitalized elsewhere when they reach their maximum, but the budget cuts, they're $9 million in the hole, I'll have to tell you, at least $9 million in the hole. They can't do that anymore. And they have received letters from the regulators saying if you're over your beds, you are endangering your staff and the people in there, so you can't go over your beds. We will pull your license if you continue to do this. So that is the reason why, when they reach their maximum, they close their doors now. And I don't know if any of you read the Bee today, but there's an article in the Bee today about how the emergency rooms are getting over. They're having a lot of trouble because they could no longer take these patients to the mental health treatment center. And as a county employee, I'm thinking that is really terrible. On the other hand, while they were breaking the rules and getting people and having 110 people there, nobody noticed, did they? Nobody really cared. $9 million in the hole, they've been saying that since June of last year, and nothing happened. But when they closed their doors, and other people are feeling the pain, all of a sudden we need to do something. And the CEOs of the hospital systems are calling the county and saying, we need to do something about this. So sometimes you have to precipitate a crisis, unfortunately, before anything gets done. This is a terrible situation. We really under-treat and underserve people with mental health issues. No question about that. And the last thing, which is such a shame, is because we do not treat mental health, many people with mental illness that don't belong there end up in jail. And the largest mental ward in this county is in the main jail. What an embarrassment that is. And unfortunately, it's been that way for years. We're no better than the 12th and 13th century when we chained mentally ill people. And that's how we treated them. We are essentially doing that today. We just don't talk.
We don't even have a statement.
Next, please. So let me talk about undocumented residents. I told you that on February 10th, the Board of Supervisors voted to eliminate services for undocumented residents that get services from the county. They were told that they would be saving $2.4 million by doing this. I'm not sure how that calculation was made. It hasn't been shared with me. So in Sacramento County, most people will say that in California about 4% of our population is undocumented. So if we were to do that for Sacramento County, nobody really knows because until now nobody asked, honestly, whether people were documented or not. So 56,000 people living in this county, more or less, are probably here illegally. They're probably undocumented. They tend to live in poverty. If you're undocumented, you tend to work in low-paying jobs. Most of us suspect, at least I do, that a lot of folks have restaurants, a lot of folks have clean rooms in hotels. A lot of people who do gardening are probably undocumented. I could be wrong, but I just get that sense. Probably construction. My neighbor had her roof replaced a few years back, and everybody that was on that roof, removing the old roof, spoke only Spanish. So I suspect that among those workers, there were probably undocumented workers. I could be wrong because I don't know and I didn't ask. Study after study after study has shown that the people who tend to come here who are undocumented, and I'm talking mostly people from Mexico, although there are a lot of undocumented people from Central America, and actually Canadians, there are a lot of undocumented Canadians. They tend to be relatively young, relatively healthy, and they tend not to seek medical care until they are too sick to work or they have a catastrophe. And then they do seek medical care, but they tend to avoid doctors, not see physicians most of the time. And study after study after study has shown that. Next one, please. So this is actually from the Pew Hispanic Center. And this shows unauthorized immigrants in the United States by age and sex. So they're mostly men, and you will see that the bump is in the 20s, you know, 15 to 19, 20 to 24, 25 to 29. So they tend to be relatively young. And this was before we closed our borders. There's something really interesting that has happened now that it's harder to go up back and forth. These folks tended to come in seasonally, work, and then go back home. So they'd be here in the States for 6 months or so, then go back and move back and forth through our relatively porous border, thank you. Next one, please. And this is the number of adults without health insurance divided by citizenship. So U.S.-born citizens are about 14% without health insurance. Legal immigrants, about 24%. Undocumented immigrants, 60% essentially, have no insurance. Okay? So they do tend to be the uninsured. Next. Children without health insurance by what their parent status is, okay? So children of U.S.-born parents, 8% don't have insurance. Legal immigrant parents, about 36% don't have insurance. But take a look at the children. Even if the children themselves are born in the United States, something like, 70% of the children have no insurance. Next. So let's talk about children, because everybody wants to insure children. I've never heard anybody say, oh, let children die. Everybody wants children to have insurance. So let's see what we have in Sacramento County for children. We have California Children's Services, which is for children who have chronic severe illnesses, like cerebral palsy or muscular dystrophy. Their parents, up to a certain amount, I think parents can make up to $45,000 a year, I think, and still qualify for CCS services. And they provide case management, physical therapy for these children. The CHDP program is a program that was started many years ago, uses EPSDT, early prevention. I don't know what EPSDT stands for, but it is a federal program. It uses federal matching programs. Can you tell me?
Yeah, treatment and diagnosis.
Early prevention, treatment, and diagnosis for children. And it pays for physical exams, and it also pays for treatment of acute problems that could become disabling for children. So that is CHDP. We vaccinate our children. There's a Vaccines for Children program that provides free vaccinations to physicians' offices and clinics, and any parent should be able to bring their child in, whether they can pay for it or not, and get all the vaccinations that are recommended. We have Family Pact in California, and that is, again, is a match of the state with federal funding to provide reproductive health services. So women who are poor or don't have insurance can still qualify for services for family planning and treatment of sexually transmitted infections. So that's available. Men too can have at least treatment for sexually transmitted infections through Family Pact. You heard about Healthy Families, you probably know about that. This is the S-CHIP program, we call it Healthy Families here in California. And it's for people who are up to 200% of poverty, I believe. Their children can still get insured. The parents can't, but the kids can get insurance. Medi-Cal, we talked about already. Then in Sacramento County and about four other adjoining counties, there is a program called Cover the Kids. It is funded with First Five, that's the Proposition 10 tobacco tax money, and it provides services and insurance for those children who don't qualify for any of the others. So if you can't get healthy families, you can't get Medi-Cal, your work doesn't provide insurance, then you should be able to purchase insurance for your child up to the age of 18 to cover the kids. So again, on paper, no child in Sacramento County should be without insurance. But that, of course, is on paper. We already heard about all the issues. Next, please. So let's talk about the health programs for underserved adults, because there are some. They may be going away. The governor has also proposed eliminating these programs. But right now, they exist, at least for the next, 23 days or 27 days. Every Woman Counts pays for low-income women to get breast mammograms and also cervical cancer prevention, so pap smears, etc. Every Woman Counts pays for that. There's emergency Medi-Cal that is available for undocumented, actually, would qualify for emergency Medi-Cal. If a woman is pregnant, it pays for treatment and for prenatal care. It also will pay for emergency admissions to hospitals if you qualify for Medi-Cal, for emergency Medi-Cal. There are prostate cancer services for low-income men that provide for screening and I believe some treatment for men who have prostate cancer. And then I already mentioned Family Pact. Yes, ma'am.
Every Woman Counts is only for women 40 and older. So if you have a 30-year-old with a breast mass, she is out of luck because there's no longer funding.
Okay, these are the special restrictions on each of these programs. I don't know if you heard, Every Woman Counts is only for women 40 years of age and older. So if you have a 30-year-old woman who's a single adult and doesn't qualify for CMISP and she has a breast lump, she's out of luck. And that is true about all of these programs. Yes, ma'am?
You mentioned the testing. Does it also cover treatment?
Yes, Every Woman Counts will cover treatment, at least now. There are times when the funding disappears for the treatment and then it comes back. So it sometimes gets restricted, but as of today, I believe it still covers treatment. I think these programs are slated to be eliminated if the governor gets what he has proposed. Next, please. So I'm not going to talk too much about Medicare, but you all know about Medicare. We talked about the new medications. The people over the age of 65, those who are disabled, will qualify for Medicare. One thing that you may know is that if you have kidney failure and you need dialysis or kidney transplant, you automatically qualify for Medicare, and your insurance will drop you. So you need to realize that most insurance has a limit. And if you get sick enough so that you reach your limit, and people with catastrophic diseases like cancer or organ failure frequently reach that limit, it's usually $1 million or $1.5 million, then they automatically drop you and you end up on Medicare. Yes, ma'am.
I was going to say, I've been on Medicare for years, employing the choice. And then when that drug bill passed, I was put into Medicare Advantage. I'm insured out of Michigan. And there are all kinds of dips and problems with it that I've had since that passed.
Medicare Part C, you heard, since Medicare Part C, medication passed, it's caused an awful lot of problems, and you're not alone. Yeah. I have heard of a lot of seniors that picked the wrong plan, they didn't realize it didn't cover their medicine. There's this donut where you get into a certain amount, and then it doesn't cover your medicines for a while, and then it starts covering them again. Really complicated. Kind of a sellout sort of a program.
What's happening is, because I didn't pick anything, I'm insured forever out of Michigan. However, what Medicare did, what they're doing is paying Blue Cross Blue Shield to cover me. That's what's going on.
So,
and there come the restrictions and the problems.
So this lady is covered by Medicare from Michigan, but they pay Blue Cross.
Medicare. I'm billed out of Blue Cross Blue Shield in Chico.
Blue Cross Blue Shield is now doing the restrictions
for your
medication. So it's very complicated. I honestly don't understand it, although I better because I'm getting there, where I'll qualify for Medicare. But it's very complicated. It's not clear that it was really a huge benefit. I think it can be if you really pick right and correctly, but it can be a real problem. Yes, sir.
It's also important to realize that people who only advertise on Medicare D, if you had a group coverage and you signed up for one of those, you could cancel your group coverage and be stuck with just a prescription, but doesn't do you much good if you don't have a doctor and other medical services. And this has not been widely publicized as the insurance company should have done it, but didn't.
Thank you. Did you all hear that? Medicare Part D. I'm sorry, I've been calling it Part C. It's really Medicare Part D. If you signed up for a program for medication, you had a group insurance, and you didn't pick right, you could end up with prescriptions and no doctor to prescribe for you. Lots of problems. Yes, ma'am.
Well, another thing that I think is weird is not only do you have to know all the drugs that are you need now, you're going to have a fortune teller's ball to know what you're going to need in the next year.
Yeah.
Because when you can't change plans, and so if your drug that you're going to need next month when you have a heart attack, if that's not on that plan, you don't get it.
Right. Did you hear that? You have to also be a fortune teller and know what drugs you're going to need in the future to pick the right plan.
Well, one of the worst things that came out of Medicare Part D was they got that bill passed by excluding the government's right to bargain for the price of drugs.
Yes.
So that's why our drugs are still so high.
That was
in the world.
That was a major problem, yes. Next one. Okay, so I told you all the things you can't do. There are two places where you can go where they can't turn you down. If you call 911, they have to come. I found this out in 2001 when everybody was worried about anthrax and finding anthrax in their bathrooms, etc. And the 911 system has to respond, whether they believe you really need them or not, they have to respond. The other place where you can't be turned away is emergency rooms. If you go to an emergency department, they have to do something for you. Now, they may not do what you want them to do, they may not even admit you, even if you need admission, but you do need, they can't turn you away without doing a good faith medical exam. So those are the two places, and that's why our emergency rooms get crowded, because if somebody can't access medical care any other way, they can go to an emergency room and get something. Next, please. In Sacramento County, we have some shortages of specialists, and those of you who have needed these specialists probably have realized that you wait a long time, or you may have to leave town, go to San Francisco or elsewhere to see one of these specialists. Next. I'm going to go a little bit quickly because I think I'm running out of time. Healthcare costs to individuals with catastrophic illnesses. We know that 50% of bankruptcies in this country are due to medical bills. I'm sorry?
62.
Oh, it's gone up from the one that I saw. 62% of bankruptcies are due to medical care. Lots of people can't qualify for the government programs unless they spend down themselves into poverty, and people do that just so that they can get the medical care that they need. Many people, as I mentioned before, reach the limit of their insurance and they get dropped. They literally get dropped by their insurance. Insurance no longer will cover whatever treatment they need because the insurance company is cutting its losses. And you already heard that the insurance company is for the shareholders, it's not for the people they insure. Next. So, everybody always complains that government programs are too expensive. Taxpayers paying through the nose for all these government programs. Well, yeah, because insurance companies will only pay for you while you're healthy. When you get sick, guess what? You end up on a government program. So the sickest people are on Medicare. The sickest people are on Medi-Cal. The insurance company isn't going to cover you. And we know that some companies pay their employees wages that are low enough so that they can qualify for Medicare.
That's right.
That is a way they do things. So, in fact, government programs are really expensive, and it's because they take care of the sick people while the healthy people are being covered by the insurance companies, and they can collect the profits of not getting the care. And as I said, this is my own personal opinion. I think that may be the last slide.
Yeah.
So this is, I think, what sets the stage for single payer. I mean, if we're all in the same risk pool, and you know, we all have benefits that cover what we really, really need. People want better insurance. They want their plastic surgery covered. God bless them. Let them go buy an insurance policy that does that for them. But for people who need services, vaccinations for children, pap smears, that we should all have access to that, regardless of what we do.
thank you, Dr. Trochet, for that incredibly comprehensive description. I've been in healthcare a long time, and I don't think I've ever had a better course on healthcare eligibility. I just want to make a couple of comments before we break. We're going to facilitate the discussion, since all of you are so knowledgeable and have a lot of good things to say, we want to make sure everybody else can hear you. So there, from now on, when we ask questions of the speakers, we've got that mic. You might want to line up if you've got a question during the presentation so that you can get your turn on the mic. We want to remind you about our program evaluation. Please fill that out sometime before the end of the day. And also, don't forget to do your registration. We're going to take a 10-minute break and then begin with our next speaker. And then after that, we'll have two more speakers, then lunch, and a presentation during lunch. So let's take 10 minutes right now and be back at 11:25. Thank you.